our places quickly. Want to welcome all of our good friends and neighbors to our traditional Sunday morning meeting, and say that we're going to start this meeting with a song. You heard Grant's song yesterday about the Cannonsville Dam. We're going to sing a song that you know about, a dam that's far away, and that's on the Columbia River. Roll on, Columbia.
Roll on, Columbia, roll on, Columbia, roll on. Your power is turning the darkness to dawn. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Green Douglas firs where the water shines through. Down her broad mountains and mountains she flew. Canadian Northwest to the Pacific so blue. Roll on, Columbia.
Join in on the chorus.
Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Your power is turning the darkness to dawn. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. At Bonneville now there are ships in the locks. The water has risen and cleared all the rocks. Now shiploads of plenty will steam past her docks. Roll on, Columbia, roll on.
Once more, please.
Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Your power is turning the darkness to dawn. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Boom, boom.
We told some of you last night that when the movie of the Cannonsville Dam was being made, Grant submitted two songs. You heard the one song, and today he has the other song that they didn't use, and we'd like to have him sing that.
Somebody to teach it to you.
That's true.
Yeah, I was going to do this last night, but I was afraid to try it.
Come and listen, one and all, now that you have heard the call to give up the lands we've loved for many years. Though it's true it breaks our heart, from the old homes we must part and see them buried neath this mighty, mighty dam. And the old familiar faces that we meet day by day. Some of them we'll never see again. They've gone on their separate ways. It's a mighty world, it's true, but all that's left to do is to find our lands and start a life anew. When this valley that we pride is filled with water far and wide, and forever holds our hopes so secretly, and the memories, we get it, only memories of the past is all that's left at last to remind us of the things that used to be. Now that we have heard the call and have gladly gave it all, just remember the old adage is better to give than to receive. Maybe there will come a turn, man, the thing we will learn is learn. If it be us some, maybe someday we will need the helping hand. But them old familiar faces that we meet day by day, some of them we'll never see again. They've gone on their separate ways. Only memories of the past is all that's left at last to remind us of the thing that used to be.
I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
You'll pardon me if I reminisce a little bit. I think it was probably about 1936 about the second year of my teaching Little Red Schoolhouse, I took a group of students to a dam that was being built in the Catskills. You know, there have been a lot of dams built. Even before that, the Ashokan was built. And later I came to know Herbert Houfrecht, and he made a cantata about the Lackawack Dam. But I remember now he also composed the song The Lackawack Blues. You remember that? A blues song about moving out of the valley. So that there's quite a tradition of songs being written about these about the reservoir. I also at this time would like to say that out of the many festivals and the songs that were taken down, we can with quite a bit of certainty say that there will be a collection of songs published. We've been saying that, and it hasn't been the fault of the collectors, but it's been the fault of the publishers. Will someone hold up that cover? It's on the bench there of the collection, which is edited by Norman Kasdan. That's the book jacket. And this is the Abelard Folk Song Book, More Than 101 Ballads to Sing. Why is it 101, Norman? Edited and arranged for piano, guitar by Norman Kasdan. There will also be, now this collection contains some songs that were not collected here at festivals, but the songs which come from the Catskills will be put out in a special edition, which will be the collection that we will feel is the closest to Camp Woodland. At this time, I'd like to ask Grant and Harry Robinson to fiddle for us. Incidentally, Harry Robinson lives near the Lackawack Dam, in that area where we used to take a lot of trips to a valley that was being cleared out. Given me an idea. If we ever have a meeting where we can't seat any more people up here, we can seat them there. Is a Scottish week for us with the play about Dingle Hill, and I seem to remember that you had a fiddle tune that sounded a great deal like bagpipes. Do you remember that?
I used to, but I forgot that now. We start in with one called Sandpiper's Reel, I think. Thank you.
younger children haven't heard that tune that has some chickens in it. And this is in honor of the senior camp's chicken farm. Mike Todd says he has a bear joke, not a bear story, but a bear joke that he'd like to tell.
It happened. I don't know what year, but quite a while ago. There's a fellow by the name of Knapp, Charlie Knapp. He's way over 200, and he was bragging what he could do, hunting and so forth. So he went with me one day bear hunting. We followed the no bear and two cubs about 2 miles. And they went on the wing of what they call Spruce Mountain, down the head of Dry Brook. Now I said, I'll take you up Rock Brook on a good runway. Pretty sure there'd be laying up in the ledges there, and they'd run through the head of that valley, Little Rock Brook. So I did. I took him up there and left him there. Went and started the bear, all right and slick. and they run within 20 feet of where he stood, but there wasn't no man there. And then I was mad, and I jumped him. I told him, I said, they run right by where I left you. He said, that's what I was afraid of.
Now, I'd like to introduce Mary Scott, but I'd like to tell you something about why she's here today and the whole story. This is something that's an old story for work camp and for most of senior camp, but for junior and middle camp, I think we need to tell you this. I guess you know that there's a play about Dingle Hill. Everybody knows that. This play is about farmers who worked very hard on their land, but they could never own their land. It's as though you made something for yourself. You sewed yourself a dress, and you worked hard, you made the dress, and it was a nice dress, and you wore it every day, but it wasn't your dress, it was somebody else's. It was the same way with the land, all around here. It wasn't their land, it was somebody else's, and that somebody else would never sell it, no matter how much you did to make the land better, no matter how long you lived on it, it was never yours. And the farmers didn't like that. And they said, well, we're not going to pay rent to this man anymore. We're not going to pay for our land anymore to this person. And then there was a fight, and a man was killed. And the people got very angry, and they said, who did that? Some of the farmers must have done that. And there was one man who spoke up for the farmers. Well, there were many who did, but this man especially. And he wasn't afraid to speak up, even though they put him in prison. Still, he spoke up for the farmers. And that took a lot of courage to spend several years in prison just because you would speak what you believe and not what someone else wanted you to say. And this man's name was William Brisbane. And this was a long time ago, over 100 years ago. And William Brisbane had a brother named Bob. And later on, Bob had children, and one of those children was Mary Brisbane, who is now Mary Scott. And she remembers her father, Bob. She remembers her uncle, William. And I'd like to have her come here and like to ask her a few questions. This place that many of you have seen, this mountain where all this took place, Dingle Hill, is a place where she lived when she was a little girl. Mrs. Scott, could you tell us some of the memories of your uncle, what you had heard about him or anything about him?
I don't
Didn't they say that he refused some money?
Oh, yes. They offered him $1,000 to make a speech against what he believed, and he wouldn't do it. And they put him in jail, and then they was going to hang him. And they misused him terrible in jail. But he wouldn't give in.
And they, when you were young, they told you stories about all of this, didn't they?
Well, not too many. Mm-hmm. My father wasn't very much a hand to tell much about anything.
Uh-huh.
He did say once about, he had his, they always busy looking for the posse coming after him. And he was out working in the hayfield, and he had his hay all in windrows. And he saw the posse coming, and he didn't have time to go to the woods. So he crawled in under one of those, and they turned every one of them over but five, and he was under the one of the five.
We're very much interested in stories about the way the country was a long time ago, and you were telling about the school that you went to. About how many children were
about
there?
About 14.
About 14, and how many different grades?
Well, all grades.
Uh-huh.
And first year high.
All grades and first year high, and 14 children. And the teacher, where did she live?
Well, she boarded around with all of us.
She had spent one night with one family?
Well, she spent most of the time with us because the children would get mad at her and wouldn't ask her to go home with them.
If you didn't like your teacher, you just wouldn't invite her home.
No, no. But she always went up home with me. I never got mad at my teacher. I always liked my teachers.
And this was the way the teacher got her pay, isn't it?
Yeah, no.
Did she get some money besides food?
Oh, yeah. She. My father said he hired one teacher for $1.25 a week.
$1.25 a week. It's a little better than that now.
And... Then the district didn't like that because that was too little. And then he hired another teacher and gave her $5, and then they found fault because that was too much.
That was too much.
So you see.
You were telling stories about what you would do at recess time.
Well, we used to go out and play ball, what they call four old hick. There's four of us. We didn't have no regular playground, but we used the middle of the road. And... two would bat and the other two would catch. We had all wore aprons to school at that time. We used to take our apron to catch the ball. And we had a barrel stay for a bat, so we surely hit it.
A barrel stave, you know, the barrel, the piece of wood that make up a barrel, nice and wide.
And then at recess, in the wintertime, we used to have schooners to ride down. That was two barrel staves, you know how they are.
Yes, they're curved. The barrel staves are curved.
And we had one went one way and the other, and we had them both, one up and one down. We fixed the where we rolled bumpy, so when you go forward, you know, it'll throw you off.
Well, a place like Dingle Hill, there are lots of places to coast, aren't there?
Oh, yeah. I used to ride to school, but my mother didn't like it, on a hand sleigh down across the field amongst rocks and
stumps. You just coast right down to school.
Yeah.
You were up on the hill, I remember, and the school was down.
Well, we went out through Crossroad to go a little ways before we got to this slope.
Uh-huh.
And then there was rocks and everything. Mother didn't know I was out doing that. But
did you ever run into a rock?
No. I could steer it around. We steered with our heels, you know, then.
Dragging your heels.
And if we wanted to go one way, you'd put our heels in. But there wasn't those little low things like these are today. I don't like them belly gut ones. They're too. And then we used to.
You used to play store. Will you tell about that?
We used to build a store that we could stay in when it rained. We'd out in the just the edge of the woods. We cut down some poles and put across, and then got the hemlock boughs and put all over it and up the sides. And we could stay out there, and we used to be busy nights making money. We had lots of it then. And we'd take a silver piece, you know, and a piece of pasteboard and rub on it till you got that all marked onto, just like it was on the feet. And then we used to cut it out round, so we had a nice lot of money.
Well, what would you sell there at the store?
Oh, we used to take little old pieces of glass if we could find, and we used to make that little dowel chairs out of cork and pins for the legs and pins for the back and weave yarn through that. And so we used to sell them for a quarter, paper money.
About how old were you when you had to start milking cows?
Oh, I just a little bit of a codger. You used to want to strip. We had to strip them. They'd leave a little bit in the cow's bag, you know, if you strip out. And we milked in the middle of the road. And when the there was no cars, a wagon would come along, we had to get up and grab your stool and get out of the road and then go back to your cow. And
about how old would you say you were when you started?
Oh, about six.
About 6 years old when you started milking.
My youngest daughter, she wanted to, we didn't want her around amongst the cows because she'd get kicked. And I said to her one day, now if you play and milk cows, you can't play the piano. So I missed her, and by and by she came back down to the barn. She said, Mama, do this so I can play the piano too.
You said that you used to take your daughters to, was it Delhi?
Yeah, Delhi.
In a wagon for music lessons?
Every Saturday.
How long would it take you to get to Delhi?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't drive very fast. Maybe an hour and a half with a horse.
An hour and a half with the horse.
And I used to take my oldest daughter up to Bellina Center to high school the first year with a horse. You were in tours.
That was
3 miles.
3 miles up. Mm. And kind of bad road, wasn't it?
Some of the time in the winter.
The roads weren't as good then as they are now.
You'd upset, you know, going around the curve when the snow drifts. Mm. You know, I think more fun than we do today. Mm. It was harder work.
It was harder work, but more fun.
Mm-hmm. We used to have you must have went by that Wintergreen Hill patch that we used to have.
Wintergreen Hill?
Yeah, the patch when you went to McLean's, yes. Right? Uh-huh. Between that and where Dick, or I don't know who lives there now. Mm-hmm. And every night after milking, we'd go out pretty near, we'd meet up with what we call the Andes Turn, where you turn towards the Andes and all go together out the Wintergreen patch. And then we'd take those berries to school the next day, sell in our store.
Well, thank you very much. That was very interesting. When I talked to you at the museum about the pioneers, one of the things I tried to impress on everybody was that the pioneers did very fine things, very careful things, working with their hands. They didn't just do slip-slop kind of thing, you know, and be content with anything. They really took pains for what they did. And they tried to do things that looked very well. And I think that you will understand that after you have seen Chris Backman make a scoop. Now, this making of scoops was a pioneer kind of work that came to Chris Backman from other people. In the old days, somebody taught somebody else, and that's the way it got to Chris Backman, and he's going to make a scoop, a small one, right here on the bench right now. And this is not a tall tale.
Mark. crack it on? Well, you do that with your eye, according to your website.
Do you want to stand up here? I think some of the people in the back could see better then.
What's this ad is too big for a loose scoop like this. This scoop is wide, you see. You can come right down the front of it here, you see. Get all out. Being this is little, you can't be just cutting here a little bit. And you have to do the rest of it. Tool. You have to kind of watch out that you don't cross that line too much, you see. Then you. Well, now what do we do next?
Wait a minute. Here's something.
One of the work camp blocks.
Oh, that'd be fine. That's the thing.
By the way, most of these tools Mr. Backman made.
I made everything but the axe. Yeah. This knife I made out of a file. Throw it in there. Ground it up. This I made out of a round piece of steel. Often wondered how it. I get this inside out. Not a lot of work. You make a nick in there, then you got a stand. See how I figured out? Now I'll make something like that. So you see how nice that fits in there? Just come around that curve. I got that. It's pretty high up here. Maybe they can see down here. Man. Then you take your axe. The main thing is not hit the finger, you see. Trim this off and you don't want to go over that line. Just right up nice short, see, like that. Down here to get that sand on there. Then you want to make that look like all one cut. So when you start to finish it off, you haven't got a lot of nicks in there to get a lot of steam drying out. See, it begins to look like a scoop already. That's about all you can do with the axe. Yeah. Then you come up here and you put it in the vise. You just ride around here with that thing. You got right out. You got to do all this for your eye. You ain't got no pattern. See how nice and
yes.
Cool that is? That's where you have to come around. See, you see? How nice and clean it is?
Those of you who are in the upper rows, you'll see it later. Now, would you show us on the handle how you work the handle?
Well, then you got to trim this up a little bit here. So then this is the thing I made myself do. Just go over the back here. Then it's quite small. Then you have to take your knife and you come around here, you see. Get this knife around. And when you start a cut, you always want to pick it right on off. Never bring it down there and start it. If you do that, it's a nick. Then you got to get that out. When you start a cut, you want to cut it right on down. Take that shaving right off, you see. See how nice and smooth on that? Leave it there. And to leave that little nub line, you got to come back on it from this way. You always want to work with your knife like that, you see, and keep your thumb back out the way, see? You can cut it so much truer. You go cutting this way or some way, if you don't have your thumb here to guide it, you're liable to miss and make a... You keep your thumb up there, but keep it out of the way of that knife.
What kind of wood is that, Mr. Backman?
This is soft maple.
Soft maple.
Now you see, in order to keep this wood white, you want to work the wood the minute that you cut it. You don't want to let it lay around. It's got what is called sap in it. If you cut this tree down and work it right up, and get your scoop pretty well finished, then put it into boiling water for 10 minutes. That'll take all that sap out. It'll be just as white as them there. If you don't, see them streaks in it? They'll always be there. That sap dries in there and it's got some kind of a stain that it hits. And it strikes right through, just like a stain on any shirt or anything like that. And stay right there forever. But if you boil that in 10 minutes to take the sap out, your boots will always stay white.
Just keep right on. We're going to close with a song, and I think, thinking back over the festival, the people from the city and the people from the country coming together, the songs, our pioneer traditions, I think there's no song better than "This Land Is Your Land." First, there's an announcement. Wait, will everybody sit down, please? Sit down. We have an announcement. Yes? Would you make the announcement? Yes, Carl. Okay, let's have our song now.
This land is your land.
Look, have you forgotten? Don't get up and start. Not very polite. I want you all to remain seated until the song is finished.
All right, everybody. This land is yours.